On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It is a wild and wacky war zone out there in cable TV newsland. MSNBC's Keith Olbermann rails against Fox giant Bill O'Reilly as the worst person in the world. O'Reilly cracks heads and wisecracks about the millions he's paid to bloviate his word. Lou Dobbs goes CNN ballistic nightly on immigrants. Chris Matthews throws his hardball where the poll numbers go. Anderson Cooper rises from Louisiana swamp. Roger Ailes loses Paula Zahn from Fox to CNN, then swears he could get better ratings with a dead raccoon in her time slot. Now, Fox man Tony Snow is in the White House. We need a guide to what's going on. Up next on Point, cable news chieftain Rick Kaplan, head of MSNBC, on the fate of TV news. We'll hear in a moment from Rick Kaplan, but first today, a prominent cable news TV personality, Fox man Tony Snow, is headed into the White House as new press secretary for George Bush. Rebecca Dana, television reporter for the New York Observer, joins me from New York for a look at the new cable guy at the White House press room podium. Rebecca, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
What's this guy going to bring that Scott McClellan did not?
Well, for one thing, he brings great hair. For another, he brings a lot of experience in front of cameras and sort of on the air. He has a very popular right-wing radio show for Fox News right now called Fox News Sunday, or called the Tony Snow Show.
Right.
And he hosted a show for Fox for many years called Fox News Sunday. So he has a lot of experience talking to cameras, and you know, he's a very handsome man. He's very sort of comfortable on television and comfortable with other reporters in a way that I think Scott McClellan was not. You know, Scott was not very telegenic. Scott came from a very political background. He was always working on campaigns. You know, he started working for his mother, and then he sort of went straight into working as a deputy press secretary for then-Governor George Bush.
I suppose every White House press secretary gets a nickname. You say Tony Snow already has one, Max Headroom. That doesn't sound like a compliment. That's the sort of vacuous, over-the-top, you know, TV caricature.
Right. He is a creature of television. I think that the White House press corps is optimistic, or at least hopeful, that he will be an improvement over his predecessor, at least in terms of understanding what the requirements of their job are, including, you know, they need to have more of a dialogue with the White House, and they need to have somebody who, at least from their perspective, they'd like to have somebody who is a little bit more connected, is a little bit more of a player within the president's inner circle, and also just sort of is a little bit more sympathetic to what they're trying to do and the answers that they're trying to get. So I think they're hopeful, although they also see this as one of them mentioned to me the other day, as sort of an elevation of style over substance.
You quoted Julie Mason at the Houston Chronicle saying that you write, Rebecca, that Tony Snow will be the first TV personality to become a lead White House spokesman. Now, how are you defining that exactly? What about
that's very
Ron Ness and Pierre Salinger and even Bill Moyers?
Right. Those people, you know, came into the position or either left the position and went into broadcasting, but in a very sort of conventional repertorial way. Ron Nesson was a very distinguished broadcaster, but he was a correspondent. You know, he was on air and he wasn't a commentator. He wasn't a personality. So the word personality, I mean, Tony Snow, what he's known for is this colorful language. I mean, he said that Scott McClellan has been clubbed by the press like a baby seal. You know, he's of the sort of Rush Limbaugh school of right-wing talk radio.
He often sat in for Rush Limbaugh.
Exactly.
So now, what's the word in the first day? Are people thinking this is really going to be a new day? Do they believe that Tony Snow is going to have a place at the policy-making table, or is that spin?
You know, I think everyone is wary but hopeful. I mean, I think that they're happy. I'm speaking on behalf of White House correspondents now, and I've only spoken to a few handfuls of them, but I think they're very hopeful that this signals, as Josh Bolten has suggested he wants to do, a change in the relationship between the White House and the press corps. I think that there's a lot of evidence to suggest that in fact it's a much more superficial change than that. But the people I spoke to were at least hopeful that this might mean some improvement.
Well, part of the big Bolton change going on there at the White House, it will be fascinating to watch, and a new tenor certainly with an experienced TV guy at the podium. Rebecca, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Rebecca Dana reports on television for the New York Observer. We are talking this hour about the direction of TV news, of cable TV news, with Rick Kaplan, president of MSNBC. Kaplan has one of the most storied off-screen careers in decades of TV news. He worked on Walter Cronkite's CBS News way back in the 1970s. He was executive producer of Good Morning America's News, of ABC's Nightline in its glory days, of Primetime Live, of World News Tonight with Peter Jennings. He was president of CNN from 1997 to 2000. Since February 2004, he's headed up MSNBC with its nightly lineup now of Abrams, Matthews, Olbermann, Rita Cosby, and Tucker Carlson. Rick Kaplan, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
First question, I'm trying to figure this out. I look at the audience numbers for cable, and they are, you know, for national numbers, they're kind of astonishingly small. I mean, some of these numbers are no bigger than a very mid-sized American town's newspapers. Bill O'Reilly's got a couple million, but you quickly get down into the hundreds of thousands and even 100,000 plus in key demographics. So why has cable news, in your view, become such a big kind of deal and talking point in American society, culture, politics, when its audience is relatively modest?
Well, you have to understand the way the numbers are calculated. It's not, if you have an audience of 2 million people in cable, as Bill O'Reilly does, or if you have an audience of 800,000 or 600,000, that's listening or watching at any particular time. Across an hour, these audiences change. Every network keeps an audience for a different amount of time. The truth is that in watching an hour of cable news, you might have many millions of people watching. They just don't watch for the whole hour. We find that across a week, we probably have 22 or 23 million distinct viewers of MSNBC. At any particular time during the day, all four cable networks put together only have about 1.25 million people. That's hardly worth doing programming for. That's not worth it. You know, it's not quite a business.
Mm-hmm.
But what you do when you drill down into the numbers is you realize it's 250,000 people at any one time, but that number will change. And across an hour, there might have been 4 or 5 million people who kind of tuned in, and that the audience turns over. So it's not like TV. It's not like a TV entertainment where, you know, you're watching ER for an hour, you're watching The Office for an hour. People dip in. They dip in for 10 minutes here, 20 minutes there, and the numbers build up. And the demographic is kind of extraordinary in that, for instance, I Miss in the Morning has...
Which you air now.
Which we air.
The visuals on TV.
Yes, we air 6 to 9 a.m. with Don, Eastern Time, just to get the plug right. And he might have a couple hundred thousand people at any particular moment. He's got 10 million more on radio. But his demo, the people watching... I will tell you, when I walk into a Washington dinner, there's not a congressman, senator, or cabinet member who can't tell me what happened on the IMUS program that day. So it's not a bad demo.
So there's a power demo there. You have lived in the heights of network television news. I mean, you've been right up there with all the bigs. We heard the names that you're associated with.
I mean, they stay in the business long enough, you kind of get around.
Well, you get around, but here you are now. In cable, not right. In network, and in one of the smaller cable news channels. I mean,
well,
I'm looking
in cable,
here.
Not in broadcast.
It's not in broadcast, excuse me. That's right. I mean, I'm looking here. Fox has got, as I count it, 12 of the top 14 cable shows. MSNBC down at, you've got Olbermann there at 16, and then you get down to 22, 23, 24 in ratings. Are you in cable now by choice because you think that's where the future is? Or for a longtime broadcast guy like you, is this the outback? How do you look at it?
Well, it's interesting. I look at it as a whole lot more fun than a lot of things you can do in broadcast. For one thing, if you're running a network that's a broadcast network, you have a lot of entertainment considerations to make. Do you interrupt for this? Do you interrupt for that? Because you have to work your way around My Name is Earl or...
Mm-hmm.
West Wing or
but
whatever.
You're essentially all news.
We're
all
just
the time.
All news, so we can just kind of there's a lot of pressures that aren't there. It also allows you to experiment and create and try things, and if it doesn't go well, then it didn't go well in front of 100,000 people instead of 10 million people.
Mm-hmm.
So you got a lot more freedom in cable. It's a lot of fun, and we're very much joined at the hip. My boss is Steve Kappas, who's the president of NBC News.
Yep.
and we all report to Jeff Zucker, who's head of television, and you know, we build towards all kinds of different eventualities.
But, you know, Americans have such a love-hate relationship with cable TV news, TV news, exactly because of that kind of range of ways you can play it. And so much of it is so glib, fast, flashy, snarky, ironic, you name it. You know, Jon Stewart does it and everybody loves it. Others do it and people still throw brickbats at it saying it's not Walter Cronkite anymore. I mean, is this stuff good on balance for the country?
Well, I don't know. I mean, on balance,
you're in charge of it,
I understand. And there are hours of my broadcast or my cable cast day that are absolutely good for the country and worth it. A lot of other hours of that day, you sit there and you go, I don't know. You know, we're obviously going to cater to different interest groups and part. You know, we have shows that deal with more tabloid kind of programming, and that serves a purpose as well. But I think the difference is that if you're on broadcast television and you're playing to very, very large audiences and you're Brian Williams and you're doing nightly news, you want to be in the kind of mold of Walter Cronkite in the sense that you're not a biased.
Sober,
even keel, and very even-handed, you know, very on the one hand, on the other hand. And you might challenge power, but it's whoever is in power. You're not coming from the right or the left. It's not a question of right versus left. It's a question of right versus wrong.
We're talking this hour with Rick Kaplan, president of MSNBC, about the direction of TV news, of cable TV news. Let's get a little bit of MSNBC in our ear. Here's Keith Olbermann. He's known for his pungent ironies on every night. He's been in a very public feud with Bill O'Reilly, who he frequently names the worst person in the world on his news show. Olbermann's statue on the cable news landscape has increased because of the feud.
Our third story in the countdown. Bill O'Reilly has launched an on-air campaign and an online petition to get this newscast canceled and replaced by Phil Donahue.
Happy days are here again. The skies above are clear again.
Time now for the most ridiculous item of the day. Bring back Phil Donahue. It was 3 years ago this month that MSNBC fired Mr. Donahue for low ratings. We felt bad for Phil. They didn't give him much of a chance. Phil actually said his firing was a mistake, and he was right. His successor, after three long years on the air, actually has fewer viewers now than Donahue did when he left. That is a disaster.
The median age of viewers of this program is 58.7. The median age of viewers of Mr. O'Reilly's program, 68.6. If you want to be concerned about well-being, Bill, be concerned about the odds of your viewers living into next week.
There you go, the back-and-forth feud between MSNBC's Keith Olbermann and Bill O'Reilly of Fox News. President of MSNBC, Rick Kaplan, is with us. Okay.
But you see, you left out the best part in your editing.
Yes.
Because what Keith does is Keith just spits O'Reilly's comments back to him. O'Reilly was wrong. In fact, Keith has a larger audience than Phil Donahue had. So as Keith would have pointed out in what you had left out of the clip, Bill, you made a factual mistake.
It's the kind of thing O'Reilly loves to do all the time as well.
What basically happened is Keith decided that enough of the demagoguing by O'Reilly. Mm. He feels he can say anything he wants and get away with it, and nobody wants to say much back to him, and Keith decided enough of that.
And, of course, because O'Reilly's numbers are a lot bigger, Olbermann's numbers go up when they feud. But is a feud between someone like Bill O'Reilly and Keith Olbermann, come back to the same question. Is this important? Is it good for the country? Is this what we need to be thinking about?
Well, I'm not sure that the function of any program is to constantly be, you know, this. We're not C-SPAN and we're not a network that is so, you know, monolithic that we're just trying to do, you know, only that which is so critical to the country. People need some entertainment. People need some lighter side. People also need to have some of their so-called icons or self-proclaimed icons perhaps outed a bit. I mean, Bill O'Reilly has taken on a much greater persona with his success. He had 3 years of virtually no listeners or viewers at all, and he's had a great run along with this White House. And he's taken advantage of it. And part of the job of any commentator or personality is to, I think, hold up to the country a little mirror on some of these people, these little demagogues, and when they get out of line or they step out of line, why shouldn't they be called to task for it? It's all part of pop culture, and it's part of that genre of reporting. Not everything that we do is foreign policy, and not everything that we do is domestic policy or politics. Some of it's pop culture, some of it's sociology, some of it's crime. You want to have, I mean, you got 24/7 of news. All we have is news. And some of it is very serious news and some of it is lighter news. And there's a mix of all of it. And some of it's on culture and some of it's not.
And yet this is where people come. I mean, maybe it's a great thing. Maybe we need this opinion boulevard where everybody's shouting it out. It reminds me for all the world of the kind of, in many ways, the carnival barker realm. I remember as a kid, way back when, Illinois State Fair. Here's a carny, you know, they used to have freak shows. And it was Andy the human frog. And out front, big sign of a, you know, a frog with a human head. And I paid my 50 cents as a 10-year-old and went in. And there's a sad-looking black man born with his arms and legs, all, you know, deformed, curled up, looks like Malcolm X in the face, reading a newspaper and smoking a cigarette on a dirty old cot. I mean, what you put out front
wasn't really the
reality that we found inside. And I wonder if cable TV in its kind of pizzazz and dazzle is leaving us in a realm of kind of, you know, funhouse mirrors, not really what's going on in the world, but a lot of really entertaining carny barkle.
Well, not all of it is that, but I'm just curious in your metaphor there, is O'Reilly the curled up African-American man?
No, I think it's the subject of the news. It's the news itself. It's what's actually going on in the world. It's portrayed in one way as we shout out to the public on cable. It may be something quite different when you actually get inside. Maybe not the razzle-dazzle.
All right, but if you took that Oberman show that he did that O'Reilly bit on, I think he said it was story three. That would mean it came about 40 minutes into the program. I promise you that the first two stories, the number five story, the number four story, and a whole lot of other stories that were in that show, good, well more than half of the story, would have been on the top stories of the day. That was you're picking on one of the items in an hour newscast.
Yep, and it's
that
a cavalcade.
Was done more for, well, his program is a very incisive look at the day's news. These are the stories you'll be talking about tomorrow. That implies, very strongly, some of those stories are going to be from Fallujah and from Washington, and some of those stories are going to be from television and radio and movies and pop culture, and some of those stories are going to be from hospitals.
We hear
it. So it's a mix.
We hear it.
It's a mix. We're not a monolith, and you can't look at us that way.
We've got the head of MSNBC, Rick Kaplan, with us. Let's hear what our listeners want to know. Chuck's calling from Washington, D.C. Hi, Chuck. You're on the air.
Oh, thanks very much, Tom. And first, if I could just make a couple of observations and then also a question for Mr. Kaplan.
Yes, please.
Yeah, sure. Tom, as you began your show today, I noted that you said that Lou Dobbs is anti-immigrant, and I just wanted to correct you on that. I think most people would observe that Lou's show has really been carrying the ball on issues relating to border security and immigration.
Well, that was shorthand and maybe too much, but he's been up in arms about illegal immigration, to be precise about it.
Undocumented illegal immigrants and the concern that he focuses on.
Got it, Chuck. We hear you're watching. Where are you taking us here?
Okay, sure. And the other observation is that, yes, indeed, Tom, as you pointed out, it may be an opinion boulevard, but I think it's a really valuable one in as much as network news in the old days of Walter Cronkite and John Chancellor and Peter Jennings, bless his heart, they were really unable to deliver what is really critically important beyond that 24-minute window.
What are you pointing to there?
Well, what I'm saying is that the vast panoply and mosaic provided by cable news now, whether it's MSNBC, CNN, or Fox.
So you say bring it on, but what do we get in that cacophony and incisive news woven through? What do we get there that we didn't get before, Chuck?
What we get, I think, Tom, is a more in-depth look at each individual story on a regular basis. And I don't think it's a bad thing that certain parts and components of the cable news universe now attract certain viewers based upon a certain personality's either philosophy, perspective, or point of view, just as Keith does for MSNBC. But my question for Mr. Kaplan, Tom, is I noted the other morning that Don Imus really went after the superficiality, he said, of Chris Matthews. And I wondered if when a situation like that happens, when a star of one of your programs, Rick,
goes after another, and you've got an internecine feud suddenly.
Yeah, begins to criticize another alleged star like Chris Matthews.
Let's talk to the guy at the top of that pyramid. Rick Kaplan, what do you say?
Well, what you'd basically say is that you sure wish your anchors wouldn't try to eat each other on a regular basis. But I think you have to take what Don says in perspective. Don Imus happens to believe that Chris Matthews is one of the really great journalists and one of the great hosts, and they're great friends, and Chris is often on the Imus program. What you have to know about the Imus program is Don is a person of differing moods and will do whatever he needs to do to spice up that day's program and make it worth listening to, worth watching. And he's been known to take after all kinds of people. He, on a regular basis, will take after me as well. I think if you sat down, Don, and said, you really think that Chris is shallow or Chris is this, he wouldn't think that at all. He just, for the moment, he was making a comment, and I'm not sure exactly what he was referring to in what you said. Just to make one point about
what
you said. You know, I think one of the great things about having all this discussion and all this debate on, and again, it's not all the networks, Fox, CNN, MSNBC, we all have news programs as well that deal with the news in longer form and give more time to just straight news reporting.
Well, sort of. I mean, those windows can be pretty short.
Well, but they're a whole, you know, they're infinitely longer than what you get than what most people were used to.
Yep.
I mean, you got, you know, just an evening news or a morning news. You know, you've got hours and hours of news coverage in the course of a day that is not spiced with opinion only or just done for fun or all tabloid. So what you get is a chance to make lots of choices. You want to see this, you want to see that. There's, you know, our competition is not just CNN or Fox. Our competition is Discovery and HBO and all the other places people can go for television and entertainment and communication and information. And there's the internet. And so if you're really a good, you know, we used to say to people who watch TV news, please read the newspapers, guys.
Right. Now you're looking over your shoulder at the internet and everything else. Michael Kinsley says we are in the twilight of objectivity, that opinion journalism is changing the face of news, that network or cable chiefs like yourself have to bet these days on objectivity because Jon Stewart may have complained about Crossfire, but Americans actually want that. Chuck says he welcomes it. Bring on this sort of clash of opinion. How much of the flow do you feel, Rick Kaplan, can we legitimately, of the news flow, can we legitimately rest on opinion instead of the old objectivity aspiration and still know what's actually going on?
Well, I don't think you want to underestimate the audience. And if you don't underestimate the audience, then you sit there and say, you know what, if you're transparent about where you're coming from, if people know whether you're O'Reilly or Tony Snow or Chris Matthews or Oberman or Joe Scarborough or any of the or Anderson Cooper, any of the folks, if you know where people are coming from on a certain issue or Lou Dobbs on a certain issue, if you know where they're coming from and there's that transparency, then you know why they're asking and saying and doing what they're doing. And if they're balancing it off with a good mix of guests and the rest, in some ways, it is a much more honest portrayal of a subject and a much more honest debate of a subject than if somebody says, well, I have no opinions. I'm just, I'm an interlocutor and I'll put these two sides on it. Well, but
maybe,
you know, a lot
maybe,
of people,
unless you get so far out there that the opinion starts to bend.
Well,
the facts
or maybe
to their view.
A lot of people question where you were coming from. Why did you book this guest and not that guest? And did you ask harder questions of one or the other? And it's those questions don't come up in a viewer's minds when there's a transparency about their opinion, where they're coming from.
I want to hear from another one of your hosts, Rita Cosby. She hosts Live and Direct on MSNBC, gives exhaustive coverage to some of the more grisly stories on cable news. One of her banner stories often surrounds the disappearance of 18-year-old Natalie Holloway last year in Aruba.
And tonight, a bizarre twist to tell you about in the Natalie Holloway investigation. While suspect Joffrey Van Cromvoort is now out of jail, it looks like the son of Deputy Police Chief Daryl Dompig may have helped put him there. Meantime, the prime suspect in the Holloway case simply refuses to back down from a civil lawsuit filed against him just hours ago.
And off we go, and off we go with Rita Cosby on MSNBC. John's calling from Boston. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? I've been dying to talk to somebody like Rick here because I want to know why all the irrelevant murders all the time. I mean, it's news for a little while, but we have to listen ad nauseum on all three of these major, on MSNBC, CNN, and Fox about Natalie Holloway and Louise Woodward with the shaken baby and O.J. Simpson. And you know what? If you were listening, nobody cares. So I'll take my answer off the air, but I'd love to hear why you have to air that sensational stuff just to sell ads.
John, we've got it. Rick Kaplan, whether it's Rita on Aruba and the Holloway story or O'Reilly on pedophilia, always comes back to it. Why, John wants to know.
Well, basically because, John, you know, God bless you, but it's not that nobody cares. If nobody cared, we wouldn't be reporting on it. When you look at the amount of viewer interest there is in these stories, and I'll be honest with you and tell you, I don't care a lot about those stories particularly, but viewers clearly do, and our job is to serve their needs. And I would hope that you don't think that we're doing it 24/7, but we have programs that do specialize, if you will, in those kinds of crime reporting.
And do they work? Can you see? Do they pump the numbers?
Yeah, they do.
You?
Actually, they do. They're some of the highest-rated shows that any network has. People are interested in those stories, and you know, God bless.
Mm. And there we are. Josh is calling from Nashville. Hi, Josh. You're on the air.
Hey, I just wanted to say that I found it interesting the age demographic that was mentioned earlier in the show. I see my own father watches some of these shows, and you know, gets all riled up about these issues that he already feels in the right with, and he only seems to watch the people who completely agree with him.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, I tease him that isn't this sort of like a faux political Jerry Springer, you know, where you can watch this junk basically and feel as if it's relevant and political, but isn't it just kind of drama and soap opera?
But you've heard Rick Kaplan say, look, there's a whole lot here. Yes, there's some of that, but we've got a whole day long, and we've got incisive news in there as well. Is that how it comes across to you, Josh?
Occasionally, I guess. And I see some of the financial programming and things that seem relatively like news, but the rest of it, yeah, just seems either they take one thing, like Natalie Holloway, and they beat it to death, and you know it's 37 days in a row of today we know no more than we knew yesterday.
About Joffrey von Kroningheimer, or whoever it may be. Josh, thanks for your call from Nashville. We're talking this hour with cable news chieftain Rick Kaplan, president of MSNBC, about the direction of television news, of cable TV news, as Fox guy Tony Snow goes to the White House as President Bush's new press secretary. Chris Matthews, one of the big guys in Rick Kaplan's stable. Let's listen to him talking with Pat Buchanan.
They roll over one indictment after another, after another, after another. That's the only thing that will make the scandal case. People have forgotten Scooter Libby.
But I don't think people have forgotten. Let me go this way, Mr. Mayor. There is an amazing. Show me the pattern here. The Democrats call it culture of corruption. But it's so sundry. You've got this guy, Safavian, the personnel director at the White House, arrested at the White House. You've got the guy who was domestic policy chief.
And there they go, and there they go, and there they go. Chris Matthews and Pat Buchanan. Dennis is calling from DeWitt, Iowa. Hi, Dennis. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Really enjoy your show. I listen to it quite a bit. I'm in my truck a lot during the day.
Great to have you, Dennis. Glad you're listening. What do you think?
Well, I wanted to ask Rick, why is it that we pay journalists like Katie Couric $18 million a year to interview chefs on how to bake cheesecake, while we pay journalists in the field in Iraq that are covering the real stories about our boys bleeding in Iraq a lot less. It really upsets me. The point I wanted to make was that O'Reilly, although, yes, a demagoguery and all that, that probably is true, O'Reilly represents a lot of the common guys out here in America that go to work every day, pay the bills, play by the rules, and we're frustrated on a lot of things, but we have no voice. O'Reilly speaks for us a lot of times versus people like Katie Couric and some of the Hollywood journalists like Katie Couric. Barbara Walters comes to mind. They don't speak for people like us out here. They mingle with Hollywood people that make millions and put money in the coffers of the Democrats, the liberal side, to push an agenda where people out here are working their tails off, paying taxes, following the rules. But we feel like we don't have any voice, but O'Reilly speaks for us a lot of times.
Maybe a demagogue sometimes, but speaks for you.
And I want to say Lou Dobbs also. I know that Lou Dobbs spoke for a lot of people when he said, hey, did you know, sir, there weren't that many American flags in the crowd here, Mexican flags?
This is at the big rallies we saw a couple of weeks ago. Dennis, you've got a lot on the table there for us, on the dashboard. Let us pick it up. Rick Kaplan, first, I don't know, let's just look at pay. And Dennis wants to know, why do the big anchors get paid so much and the guys dodging bullets don't? I mean,
I guess my wish would be that the guys dodging bullets would make as much as the big anchors. I'm not going to try to tell you that it isn't, their work isn't priceless to the country and to our companies and to our industry and our profession. So there's no getting around that. But the
Katie Couric, she's not going to be talking cheesecake makers for long. What do you think about the selection?
I think Katie Couric is a really experienced journalist, and in order to make the Today Show work, that's a show that has a lot of different moving parts, and a lot of it is hard news, and a lot of it is how to carve a turkey, and a lot of it is, of course, how to save your life medically and how to, getting colonoscopies and doing a lot of public service. So the Today Show is a far more diverse news product than what she'll be going to in evening news or the rest. And Katie was brilliant at being able to juggle those things. And, of course, a lot of people tuned in because Katie was hosting. And because a lot of people tuned in because it was Katie, that's explains why all anchors get, let's say, a bonus in their pay. People tune in to see what Katie's doing, what Tom Brokaw was doing, what Ted Koppel was doing, what Peter Jennings was doing, what Barbara Walters, all of those.
A pretty mighty bonus.
And maybe, right there. And that's why they get more and everybody kind of understands it. That's not to sit here and say, and the people who are getting shot at in Iraq, they're getting what they deserve. There's not a person from Katie to Matt Lauer to Jeff Zucker to Steve Kappas to myself to anybody who works at the network who isn't totally indebted to all those folks at all the networks and the newspapers.
Well, it's not
all
just
the
news business these days. There's big money at the top and a lot less at the bottom. Let's look at the O'Reilly icon.
Bill O'Reilly.
He's up against your guy Olbermann. They feud, but O'Reilly's numbers are huge. And you hear Dennis's interpretation. And I think he's right on the money about what's made Bill O'Reilly. But how do you interpret the phenom?
Well, no, I think that he's right. I think that, look, Bill O'Reilly spent 3 years on TV and he wasn't getting listened to much. And he grew because he does speak to a lot of people and he does speak for a lot of people.
Is he a demagogue?
That's his own personal, you can judge for yourself. That's he has his style and he has his
habits.
It's not
just a style. He's a huge public figure. I mean, it's very public.
That's right. And we can all, I think he demagogues a lot. I think that a lot of people do. I think that Bill, I happen to think, by the way, that he works really hard in that program. I think it's really well done. And I think he certainly does speak to a lot of people. And it's a very specific kind of audience that he speaks for, and they have been underserved at times. And we have lots of people on the air who kind of speak to that group and other groups. And
no kidding.
That's one of the things about cable that I think is so interesting when you take all the networks into consideration. I think they all, whether you're Fox or CNN or MSNBC, we try to reach out to as many diverse groups as we can. Lots of people like our friend in Iowa he didn't find that his voice was either being heard or being articulated.
It looks to me more like a rifle shot. I mean, O'Reilly goes for a very specific political mindset, and he draws them in great numbers. Now, Olbermann's looking for the opposite.
But he has that hour. Olbermann's kind of shooting at any. I mean, Keith is
he's very anti-Bush right now.
Keith challenges power. That's what that's about. Mm-hmm. And Keith challenged the Democratic administration when they were in.
Let me
that's what he does. And O'Reilly is very much more right versus left. And you know what? That's fine. That's really fine. He's got his hour. That's what it's for. It speaks to a lot of people. People obviously appreciate it. And they either appreciate it because they want to yell at him or they appreciate it because they like what he has to say. And it's about time somebody said it. And that's really what you try to do with your 166 hours a week.
Let me ask you about a couple of things.
Sure.
Nick Lemon, dean of the Columbia Journalism School, writing recently about O'Reilly. First, says he's in his Baroque period. And you can see this. He talks about himself bloviating. He describes what he's doing as bloviating. Irony is very big. I mean, Jon Stewart's got it in spades, but it's right on through. And your Keith Olbermann has it as well. What about the volume of irony and kind of joke machine patter that goes on in cable? And then the other point Lemon makes is he says cable is not a medium for providing information, and it is not going to become one anytime soon. Cable is the world that Bill O'Reilly made it. It's don't go there for information. It really is about opinion, irony, objectivity.
Well, I'm not sure it's about irony. I think what it is about questioning power. It's about hypocrisy. It's about outing hypocrisy, if you will. And every once in a while, people
questioning
get,
power. Do you think cable has really done that effectively over the last half dozen years?
I think if you watch Hardball on a regular basis, no matter who's in power, you play Hardball. You get questioned, and a lot of people don't.
It seemed pretty friendly to the president when his poll numbers were higher than they are now.
I don't think so. I don't think the record would show that at all. Well, one viewer's impression, and you're entitled to it, God knows. And I'm sure that somebody on some cable network speaks to that. But I think that, our Columbia person doesn't watch enough cable, or any, perhaps. And maybe he's got a bone to pick with O'Reilly, and people do. But the point is, Bill O'Reilly is terrific. And Bill O'Reilly does a service and plays to a certain audience, and he does it quite brilliantly. And it's valuable. You have to take it as part of a giant, giant offering, if you will.
We hear it. There's Rick Kaplan's description again and again of that big range of mountains that cable offers. But how tall are they? Rick is calling from St. Louis. Hi, Rick. You're on the air.
Hey, Rick. Bill is all about Bill, and that's pretty much the end of the story.
That's about right.
Hey, I want to congratulate you. I think some of your lineup is fantastic, and I want you to keep on letting Keith be Keith. He's one of the best writers out there. He writes some of the best and most, I think, thought-provoking material, and I think it's great, and just let him keep on doing what.
And you can hear how much he enjoys it when he reads it.
Yeah, I'll tell you something. That's absolutely our intention. I really believe, and I know how self-serving this is, but I think he's got the best show on television. That and Grey's Anatomy, to me, are the two best things on television.
The drum is beaten. What do you think, Rick? What's your question?
Well, I want to find out what goes on behind the scenes when an anchor or a talk show host like Dan Abrams or a Nancy Grace or a Rita Cosby really goes out on a limb and puts an opinion out there about a criminal investigation like this Duke thing, and they take a position, and then as the information comes out, they took the wrong position. You know, it's basically judgment before, you know, there's been a trial and all the facts come
Rick,
out.
I don't even know what they said. We're talking the Duke lacrosse sexual assault case here.
You know, Nancy Grace generally has never seen an innocent defendant, I don't think, in her life. And that's just Nancy. And Nancy, even when she was practicing, so to speak, she had a lot of moments where she had to take back a lot of things that she said and did. I think Dan's been pretty good about that. I don't think Dan is a very careful lawyer and is very careful not to take positions that he can't substantiate. Comes from a long line of great lawyers.
Rick in St. Louis, thanks very much for your call. Let's go to Provincetown, Massachusetts, and Melanie. Hi, Melanie. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to respond to something that kind of slid under the radar a little bit in the conversation a few minutes ago about this notion that cable news is supposed to be about people's opinions. And my feeling is that I kind of want to make my own opinion. And so I feel like we have a need for kind of a little bit more objective reporting so that we can get the information and start forming our own opinions. I've had to work harder, I think, because of cable news to try and find that information from different sources, whether it's the radio, the internet, newspapers, et cetera. And, of course, everybody has a bias. I'm not naive enough to think that everything is truly objective, but I do think that I'm less interested, especially now, in other people's opinions and more emphatically concerned with trying to form my own in a world that seems full of important things going on.
Melanie, I that message couldn't be louder in my ears, and I appreciate your calling in with that view. Let me put it to Rick. And Rick,
I'm with her. I got to tell you, she articulated, I'm in her camp, too. I really am concerned about what I consider to be just there is a lot of noise out there. And
you're part of it. You're
right. And what we're working hard to do is to try to satisfy exactly what Melanie put her finger on.
Are you really? Because respond to Melanie, are you going to get the numbers that you need to stay in business? I mean, it's a business here.
Yeah, it is a business. But I really think that you can respond to people in two ways. You can pander to them, which in the end I think blows up in your face. Or you can do what I really believe is the long-term answer, which is that you satisfy those viewers and listeners who are like Melanie, and you're sitting there saying, look, you know, it's fine to have that transparency that I'm talking about. So I know where your bias is, and I understand where you're coming from, but I do need to – I don't want to just trust blogs and all those opinions. And if you're just going to be a video blog, then I'm going to have the same kinds of problems listening to you that I have when I just go on the internet and I don't know where they're coming from. So you're looking for the right source. You're looking for someone. Are you giving it to me straight? Is this spun? Are you handling me? Am I being manipulated?
Let me take Melanie's message and bring it from another corner here. You worked for a long time with Ted Koppel,
right,
when Nightline was just on fire in the 80s. Of course, Ted is gone from all that now, has some affiliation with NPR these days. He spoke a week ago at the Overseas Press Club. Here's what he said. He said the news divisions have gone to becoming just another profit center within the enterprise of TV. They haven't entirely, but they've almost surrendered even the pretense of civic responsibility. Television news, Ted Koppel saying, has devolved into essentially what the public would like it to be. And the public, we're told, does not much care for foreign news. That's not just a shame, says Koppel. That's a travesty and a dangerous one. These are very tough Edward R. Murrow-style warnings from your old, very close colleague and friend, Ted Koppel.
And I have undying love and respect for Ted Koppel. I truly do. There's very few people in my life I've worked with who I have more affection or respect for. And I must say that, let's just say that there are people in who could have done more, perhaps, if that's Ted's feeling, then maybe he should have taken Nightline in a different direction than he did. Or
do you think Ted took it into entertainment?
Well, I think, you know, you don't, let me tell you something. You don't, you know, Ted Koppel doesn't do what Ted Koppel doesn't want to do. And if Ted was uncomfortable with the direction that Nightline was taken in, I'm happy to say after I left, but if Ted wasn't happy with the direction that was taken in, then maybe Ted should have stood his ground sooner. I was always disappointed in the direction Nightline ended up going in, And I've been disappointed in a lot of mainstream media and a lot of my colleagues, and I think there's a real challenge before us to not roll over and take the easy way.
Must be rough to be the head of a cable network and feel that way. I mean,
yeah,
do you feel all the time torn between, I don't know, news more serious than what Nightline was under the late Ted Koppel and what you're actually doing, what you need to do on the entertainment front to get the numbers to send to the corporation?
You asked a minute ago about what the great challenge and the fun is about doing this job as opposed to being on the big broadcast network before. Well, one of the things that we can do and that we're trying to do and that I think you'll see a lot of growth in the coming weeks as we rebrand our network at MSNBC is it's the challenge of trying to accomplish what Melanie was talking about and do it in a way so that you build your audience as well. I think there's a lot of people, a lot of them listen to this program, a lot of them listen to this network. I think there's a lot of people who are looking for a better sense of real news and are a little frustrated and a little put off by what we've all been doing too much of. And I'm hoping the challenge is to do it in a way that tells stories in a fine fashion. It's not that they're most people are objecting to international news. It's that we tend to do international news in an incompetent way.
We've got half a minute. Hope
half
springs
minute.
Eternal. We hear
Hope
it in your voice. Can
eternal.
This really be done, or is it the Carnival Barker menagerie that we're headed further into in cable news?
I think it can be done, and I think that and I'd be willing to go down trying.
Rick Kaplan, president of MSNBC. Rick, thanks very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation, download the On Point podcast, and subscribe to our daily newsletter, all at our website, onpointradio.org. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Julie Jopp, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Matt Lieber, Hillary McQuilkin, Tanya Raleigh, James Ross, Christina Russo, and Karen Schiffman, with help from Matt Odette and Angel Cozzelli. Our senior producer is Joe O'Connor. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.